This is Missy Hollander from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. For the next half hour, I shall be reading to you from the News and Observer's Restaurant Reviews. The content of this program is intended for a print and visually impaired audience. The first restaurant review we're going to read is for Chef's Palette. They are located at 3460 1010 Road, and that's in Cary. Their phone number is 267-6011. A quick reminder of the star rating before we get started. 5 stars mean extraordinary, 4 stars excellent, 3 stars above average, 2 stars average, 1 star fair, and Chef's Palette received 3 stars. Chef's Palette bills itself as a neighborhood restaurant and bar, and the location in a strip mall ensconced in the bedroom communities of Southern Cary certainly fits the bill. The decor strikes a suitably inviting balance between upscale and casual, too, with hardwood floors, artwork by local artists, and suede upholstered chairs at tables draped in khaki linens. But the restaurant's name hints at loftier ambitions, and the wildly eclectic nature of the art, impressionist landscapes, vibrant abstract, realist fruit still life, monochromatic mural, and subtle earth tones, makes it clear that you'd be ill-advised to add the word typical to that neighborhood restaurant and bar description. If the decor doesn't convince you, the menu surely will. The pages are illuminated, for starters, in both senses of the word. A soft battery-powered backlight glow to the pages and decorative illustrations in the margins. The words within those margins are pretty eye-catching, too. Under the headings of primers, appetizers, and gallery, entrees, you'll find dishes with fanciful names that pick up on the artistic, and in some cases, just artsy, thread and run with it. Names like Little Boy Blue Apple Salad, for instance, and the Good Shepherd's Pie, and the Tidal Pool Rendezvous, a pastiche of peppered pan-seared scallops, candied applewood smoked bacon, and grilled asparagus over creamy stone-ground Gouda grits. Chef Rick Wolf's plate presentations are as playful as the names of his creations. A starter of intense sweet potato ribbon fries is served on a platter in the shape of a painter's palette, complete with a trio of dipping sauces and little paint pots. It's tempting to dismiss such presentations as mere eye candy, until you dig in, that is, and discover that the spiral-cut chips are exemplary, and the dips, whole-grain mustard, Caribbean-spiced honey, and Iroquois-accented four cheese, are all worthy companions. The chef's creations sometimes venture perilously close to Baroque excess, but they seldom cross the line. The Howling Wolf, for instance, serves up barbecued jumbo shrimp and a crawfish-spangled potato cake, one of several souvenirs of Wolf's New Orleans background, on a subtly sweet pool of corn sobase. The shrimp are glazed with a spicy apple butter barbecue sauce that could easily overwhelm the other flavors. Thankfully, it's painted on with a delicate brush. Big Kahuna Tuna, which pairs sesame-crusted seared rare tuna, notwithstanding the menu's medium-rare description, with an Asian slaw interwoven with wakame seaweed, comes close to the mark. The accompanying ginger and peanut sauces are welcome flourishes, but the tomato salsa and the garnishing drizzle of balsamic reduction seem out of place. Commendably, appetizers are offered in 2 sizes, vignette, just right for one, and mural, ample for 2 or more. Wolf's Louisiana roots are well represented on the entree list by Voodoo Pasta, a mixed-media composition of blackened pork ribeye, shrimp, crawfish, and Andalese sausage against a backdrop of orzo and Creole tomato sauce. CP's Stuffed Rainbow Trout offers a lighter taste of bayou flavors with its stuffing of crawfish and Andalou-punctuated cornbread. In Pasto Pecan-encrusted pork marsala, on the other hand, is marred by the oddly dry filling of the accompanying fried portobello mushroom ravioli. A more satisfying option for carnivores is the rosemary and black pepper marinated Renaissance ribeye, whose tenderness, I suspect, may be attributed to connections made by owner Kathy Clark during her 14-year stint at Jimmy V's Steakhouse. Chef Palette's is Clark's first restaurant, and its painterly theme is the expression of her philosophy. I have a lot of artist friends, she says, and I've always thought of a chef's creation as art. Rick Wolf's compositions live up to that image, by and large, though my favorite, a riff on the classic Cajun deep-fried turkey featuring a whole jalapeno Tabasco-injected Cornish game hen called Pixie Fried Dixie Chicks, was the casualty of a recent menu change. Gone, too, are the delightful desserts I enjoyed, eclectic bananas Foster on a puff pastry crust, and a cast-iron skillet-seared amaretto-glazed pound cake called Southern Fried Magnolia. The new menu offers ample reassurance that the chef hasn't lost his inspiration, however, with the likes of a mahogany roasted duckling with a Bing cherry and green peppercorn demi-glaze and Peter pumpkin cheesecake. And who knows, maybe Chef's Palette will offer an artist-respective presentation of that game hen on a future menu. Again, Chef's Palette received 3 stars, located at 3460 1010 Road in Cary, and their phone number is 267-6011. The next review we're going to read is for Paradise India Cuisine. They are located at 10255-400 Chapel Hill Road, and that's in Morrisville. Their phone number is 481-6881, and they received 3 stars. Among the bumper crop of cuisines sown across the landscape by the Triangle's increasingly diverse population, none offers a more colorfully varied harvest than Indian. The flavor palette keeps expanding, too, and shows no sign of letting up. 15 years ago, if you wanted to go out for Indian, you had a mere handful of restaurants to choose from, none of them venturing far beyond the familiar curries of the North. Now there are more than 24, serving up a rainbow of regional flavors from every corner of the vast subcontinent. Paradise India Cuisine adds another color to the spectrum. A modest but attractively furnished strip mall eatery that opened in April in Morrisville, Paradise specializes in the cuisine of Hyderabad, a southern city known for its distinctive biryani. Known as dum biryani, the dish features a meat or vegetables marinated in yogurt and spices and slow-cooked between layers of basmati rice for hours in a sealed pot until the flavors meld. The menu lists 5 variations on the theme, though not all are available on a given night. According to Siva Appavu, who owns the restaurant with partner Mangesh Gurarej, there isn't yet sufficient demand to support the full range of the offering, each version of which is made with a different blend of spices. Unlike many restaurant dishes, the components of a dum biryani can't be prepared separately and then combined to order. The classic goat biryani is typically available only on weekends, but chicken biryani, which serves up shreds of spice-fragrant meat under a mound of white rice flecked with saffron-stained grains and chopped cilantro, offers ample consolation most nights. Tossed with a chili-spiked peanut sauce and a squeeze of lemon, the flavors of the dish really come to life. Other biryani options include shrimp, vegetarian, and a distinctive variation in which hard-boiled eggs are tucked just before serving into a slow-cooked medley of rice and assorted vegetables. The menu goes beyond biryani to offer a brief tour of other Hyderabadi specialties with occasional forays outside the region. From the northern end of the map and the milder flavor of the flavor spectrum are the ever-popular tandoori dishes and specialties such as Kadai Gasht, a stew of bone-in lamb, onions, tomatoes, and green peppers in a fragrant yogurt sauce. Those who venture into the Chettinadi dishes of the southern tip of India do so at their own risk. They might find themselves confronted with the likes of shrimp thoku, a gastronomic powder keg of chilies, cardamom, and a couple dozen other spices. If you're not sure of the spice level of a particular dish, ask your waiter. And if he can't tell you, a language barrier can pose a problem in some instances. Persist until you get someone who can. Hyderabadi dishes lie somewhere in the middle of the flavor spectrum, though most exhibit at least some of the fireness for which southern Indian fare is noted. Chickpea battered fried chilies, listed under the appetizer's heading as cut marachi, come to mind. The vivid red spice-dyed batter of chicken 65 looks intimidating too, but its bark is worse than its bite. The succulent nuggets of meat underneath that coating will generously reward the adventurous. So will Hyderabadi chicken korma, whose exotically fragrant curry leaf spangled sauce is spicier than that of the familiar northern version, but by no means overwhelmingly so. Fish kozuvada, on the other hand, is surprisingly salty and so intensely spicy, though not in the chili hot sense, that even my asbestos palate could only take it in small doses. Dewani Handi, a medley of cauliflower and other vegetables in a subtle sweet sauce, shouldn't prove a challenge to even the most timid palate, though the dish isn't otherwise particularly distinguished. A more rewarding vegetarian entree option is Baghar Bangang, which features baby eggplant cooked in a traditional Hyderabadi coconut curry. The menu is still evolving, as popular lunch buffet dishes earn permanent status on the dinner menu. One such recent addition is lamb goli kebab, gently spiced meatballs that would tempt even the most buffet-averse to the paradise steam tables. Regardless of whether you order from the menu or belly up to the buffet, though, the experience promises to be, well, if not quite paradise, certainly a colorful culinary adventure. Again, Paradise India Cuisine received 3 stars. Located at 10255-400 Chapel Hill Road, and that's in Morrisville. Phone number 481-6881. Pop's Good Flavors go to a new location. When Chris Stinnett and John Vandergrift announced they were moving Pop's last spring, it no doubt came as a surprise to some. The restaurant had just celebrated its 15th anniversary in February, after all, and remained as popular as the day the original owners, a partnership that included Scott Howell and Ben Barker, two of the area's preeminent chefs, opened it. Indeed, it's no exaggeration to say that Stinnett and Vandergrift, who bought Pops in 2003, built on the solid foundation of a contemporary Italian cuisine they had inherited to create a local landmark. The move wasn't far, just a couple of blocks, but it was significant in a number of ways. The new location is closer to a rapidly revitalizing downtown Durham, for one thing, where the partners have already staked a claim by opening Rue Claire, a French bistro and bakery, in 2006. Located in West Village, a retail and residential complex in a cluster of restored tobacco warehouses and cigarette factories, the new Pops is larger and considerably noisier than the old one, and boasts an attractive courtyard patio. The industrial chic vibe is largely preserved, thanks in part to a few key decor elements borrowed from the original Pops. Returning regulars will surely smile when they are greeted by the distinctive host stand repurposed from an antique washing machine and the familiar whimsical painting of a chef by local artist Jane Filer. Of all the items that made the short truck ride to the new location, though, the most important is the wood-burning pizza oven. In its new home, the oven turns out individual pies that are crisp-crusted and seductively topped as ever, from the salty egg and prosciutto that has long been a personal favorite, to the truffle-scented tapestry of Granny Smith apples, French braai, and ricotta I enjoyed recently. But pizzas are hardly the only attraction. Under the heading of Pop's Classics, you'll find a selection of perennial favorites such as the signature Big Bowl of Mussels, which lives up to its name with a bounty of plump bivalves in a white wine broth spangled with roasted tomatoes and red chili flakes. Or crispy calamari, tossed with crunchy shards of marinated cabbage and served on a harassi aioli. Among the still popular dishes that trace their roots all the way back to the days when Howell was in the kitchen are chicken cooked under a brick and risotto with North Carolina shrimp, applewood smoked bacon, roasted corn, and Parmigiano Reggiano. An exemplary Caesar salad is made with Barker's classic dressing and rustic garlic croutons torn from the bread baked at Rue Claire. On the other side of the menu, under the heading of Pop Seasonal, Stinnett and Vandergrift showcase their creative talents and their locavore leanings. Summer salad of arugula, roasted red peppers, maple-glazed bacon, and gorgonzola morphs into fall's arugula, grilled apples, and shaved fennel in a honey and white balsamic dressing. House-made gnocchi with meatballs and local tomatoes make way for linguine with little neck clams, andouille, Swiss chard, and roasted garlic in tomato broth. On the current menu, grilled salmon is irreproachably fresh-tasting and flawlessly cooked, as are its companion asparagus spears in a sublimely simple pairing. The mushroom risotto was overcooked when I ordered the dish, but given the restaurant's track record with risotto, I'm willing to bet that experience was an anomaly. Another current offering featuring penne with smoked venison, parsnips, and escarole in a bacon vodka cream sauce is every bit as satisfying as it sounds, even if the pasta is cooked past the al dente ideal. On the other hand, I could find no fault with the pecorino, a fat pasta tube filled with braised pork and ricotta that I sampled a few weeks ago. The filling has since changed to a trio of cheeses with roasted tomatoes and herbs, a combination that ought to hit the spot just fine this time of year. The dessert offering covers the usual bases, creme brulee, warm chocolate pudding cake, and a respectable tiramisu. For my money, the standout is the shareable apple walnut brown sugar crisp. Unfortunately, Pop's move doesn't appear to have shaken the erratic service that has been the restaurant's weak link over the years. Depending on the server assigned to your table, your experience may be a pleasant and uneventful one, or you may find yourself with a waiter who unceremoniously drops bread off at your table without breaking stride, or one who forgets your wine order and repeatedly serves the wrong dish to everyone at the table. Still, it's no small compliment to say that a meal at the new Pops is as good as it was at the old one. Who says a landmark can't move? Fine dining arrives in Wakefield. There's no shortage of casual restaurants in and around the sprawling Wakefield complex in North Raleigh, but until recently, residents in those upscale neighborhoods had to put a few miles on the car if they were in the mood for fine dining. Since the opening of Bruno, and that's located at 11211 Galleria Avenue, and their phone number is 435-6640, and that's in Wakefield Park, folks can stay closer to home. For that matter, it's a good bet that the casually elegant white tablecloth Italian steakhouse will draw fans from further afield. Owner Bruno Peros comes to Raleigh from New York, where he once worked at the legendary Peter Luger and opened his own successful steakhouse. Peros' experience shows in a menu that covers a classic range of steaks and chops, as well as fresh seafood such as shrimp scampi and trout amadine, and an assortment of chicken, veal, and pasta dishes. Appetizers include oysters Rockefeller, clams Casino, and, in a nod to the owner's new home, shrimp and grits. Oysters and clams are also available raw or steamed on the half shell on request. Homemade Italian ricotta cheesecake and tiramisu are, quote, just like my Aunt Mary made, says the manager bartender Jim Foglia, and I'm from New York. The restaurant has a full bar, and Foglia is developing an ambitious wine list that already offers 12 wines by the glass. Bruno is open for lunch Monday through Friday and dinner Monday through Saturday. In Garner, Edwin Hoyt and Nathan Roby have taken a more casual approach to the steak, seafood, pasta theme with their new restaurant, Terrafin Station, and that's located at 25 Old Drugstore Road, phone number 773-2220. The partners, who became friends while working for the Bahama Breeze chain, opened their first restaurant in the building that has previously been home to a string of eateries, most recently Yokohama Japanese Restaurant. They've given the place a complete overhaul, including transforming the sushi bar into a rustic tavern with exposed brick walls and sports TV screens. For some, the tavern's happy hour menu, which is offered daily from 4 to 6:30 p.m. and includes the likes of lobster and shrimp cake for $3 and fish tacos for $2, is sufficient attraction. Those in search of more substantial fare will find an entree offering divided into three sections: Terra, which land lumber fare including ribs, chicken, barbecued or fried, and an assortment of steaks; Fin, fresh seafood ranging from pan-seared scallops to fried tilapia; and Pasta, seafood jambalaya, chicken and broccoli alfredo, lobster and shrimp mac and cheese. Terrafin Station serves lunch on Saturday and Sunday and dinner nightly. And this is from Chew on This. Once again, it's time to vent a few pet peeves about the local restaurant scene. A little whining and dining, you might say. Cryptic menu descriptions that list ingredients but don't offer a clue as to how the dish is prepared. I'm not sure why descriptions like tofu, tzatziki, feta, scallion, artichoke, tomato have become fashionable of late, but I would like to know a little bit more before committing myself to the dish. Is the tofu fried or sautéed, or maybe a molecular gastronomy foam? As it stands, it's not the description of a dish, it's a shopping list. The wholesale, indiscriminate use of the term house special sauce on menus. I'm looking at you, Chinese and Indian restaurants. Instead of using that same description for half the dishes on the menu, how about telling us what makes one different from the other? Is one spicier, the other more gingery? Go ahead, tell us. We promise not to sell your secret recipe to the competing restaurant down the street. balsamic reduction. I remember precisely when this one went from refreshing change of pace to overplayed as a Katy Perry song on a top 40 radio. We were dining in a restaurant, which now closed, will remain mercifully nameless, that served nearly everything on the menu, from grilled artichokes to Cajun fried trout, with a generous squeeze bottle garnish of the syrupy sauce. We didn't stay for dessert, fearing that if we lingered, the chef might just try to garnish us. Tipping. No, this isn't my annual rant against counter service tip jars. Now I'm swinging for the fences. I'd like to see tipping in restaurants eliminated entirely and replaced with a mandatory service charge similar to what's in practice in most other developed countries, and to a modest extent in this country, as a growing number of restaurants are including an obligatory tip on the bill for large parties. My feelings about the issue have gradually gotten stronger over the years, and a recent article in the Gourmet Live blog tipped the balance. Titled "The Death of Tipping," the article gave too many compelling reasons for the change to enumerate here. For me, the clinchers boil down to this. On the one hand, our current system is inherently unfair and often capriciously used. On the other, it places undue cultural pressure to customers to tip appropriately, though even the experts can't agree on precisely what's appropriate. You can read this article online, and that website is live.gourmet.com/2010/09. And it's for the exclusive The Death of Tipping. Two new ways to go Asian. Don't let the name or the diminutive size of the dining room fool you. Sushi O, and that's located at 222-113 Glenwood Avenue, is more than just a sushi bar. Way more. In fact, the menu is as far-reaching as the restaurant, which opened 3 weeks ago in the former Dunkin' Donuts space on Glenwood South. It's compact. The Pan-Asian Bill of Fare lists nearly 36 appetizer and entree options, spanning the continent from shrimp tempura to Chinese roast duck to Thai sweet and sour fried grouper to border-hopping fusions such as Vietnamese beef tataki. Oh, and there's a full bar with an extensive list of house specialty cocktails, ranging from Midori Martini to Silk Dragon, which is vodka, peach schnapps, cranberry, and orange juice. The Pan-Asian menu trend shows no sign of letting up, though the concept often proves to be more exciting on paper than on the plate. But at least Sushi O's owner comes by his multicultural menu honestly. John Tain, who also owns Mount Fuji in Durham's Brightleaf Square, was born to Chinese parents in Vietnam, where he grew up. He moved to the States in 1981 and has worked in the restaurant business for more than a quarter century, so it's a good bet he knows the market. Sushi O serves lunch Monday through Friday and dinner nightly, with a late-night menu available Thursday through Saturday until 2 a.m. The menu is decidedly more focused at Teriyakin, and that's located at 10970 Chapel Hill Road, which opened in late August in Morrisville. The restaurant is the first for father and son partners Toshiji and Alan Watanabe. The counter service eatery caters to the nearby RTP crowd with an emphasis on fast, healthy fare. The modest selection is centered on char-grilled renditions of the restaurant's namesake specialty. In addition to chicken, steak, and beef short rib teriyaki, the offering includes a Japanese cream vegetable stew and a handful of sides such as ochazuki, which is a delicate rice stew. The Watanabes are starting off simple, but they have more ambitious plans. Pending approval of their license to sell beer, exclusively Japanese, and sake, they plan to expand the menu to include popular Japanese street hawker foods such as okonomiyaki, savory pancakes with seafood, meat, or vegetables, and yakisoba, fried noodles. Teriyakin is open Monday through Saturday from 11 a.m. to 8 p.m. And this is also from Quick Bites. Last week I told you about two sandwich shops that have serve the closest thing to authentic Philly cheesesteak I found in these parts. Maybe it's because the sandwich has its roots in the birthplace of American democracy, but in the course of my research, I discovered a surprisingly diverse assortment of sandwiches claiming the name, everything from gravy-slathered version in a sports pub to a Philly and a pita in a Middle Eastern deli. Of all of these, one in particular is noteworthy for its excellence, if not its strict authenticity. As it happens, Pizza Italia is best known for another iconic food, the New York-style pizza of Philadelphia's historic rival city. For going on 2 decades now, the little counter service eatery near the airport has had a strong following, especially among transplanted New Yorkers. I confess that I, too, consumed many a pepperoni slice before one day noticing the words Philly Steak Sub on the menu. I'm thinking Calabrian Steak Sub would be more of a fitting name for the sandwich for a couple of reasons. First, it's a salute to the origins of owners Peter and Marissa Podella, whose Italian accents and behind-the-counter banter contribute as much to the atmosphere of the place as the travel posters on the walls. More to the point, Calabrian reflects the decidedly Italian accent of the sandwich itself, whose relationship to the classic cheesesteak pretty much begins and ends with grilled beef and onions. Here, the cheese is mozzarella, and the crusty sub-roll leans closer to Italy than Philadelphia. The whole thing is topped with shredded lettuce, sliced tomatoes, and banana peppers. That's the standard version, at any rate, and they're happy to make the sub any way you like. Marissa Padilla will tell you that lots of people like to add mayo. Maybe they should offer it with Brian and call it the version of the Parisian steak sub. And we've got time for another quick bites. Try the tandoori chicken, the man behind the counter tells the customer in front of me in the buffet line. He turns to me. Have you had the soup? It's Moroccan lentil. Very good. The enthusiastic recommender is Assad Abbasi, owner of the Urban Turban, a new, well, sort of new restaurant in Cary. Abbasi has operated Baba Gunoj at this location from 2002 until this summer. Then he decided to expand on the restaurant's Middle Eastern offering, adding specialties of the neighboring regions in the Mediterranean, northern India, and his native Pakistan. He renamed the restaurant to reflect the change. If the whimsical name doesn't make you smile, then the affable Abbasi surely will, as he encourages you to sample from the cold and hot buffet spreads. I did just that recently, getting a taste of more than a dozen dishes. Highlights from the cold buffet included a smooth, smoky baba ganoush, textbook tabbouleh, and a fresh fettuccine salad with pita strips in a separate bin to preserve their crouton-like crunchiness. The tandoori chicken isn't actually cooked in a tandoor, but his flame-grilled version does his recommendations justice. Kebabs, tossed with sautéed peppers and fries, are evocative of the French-fried topped pita sandwiches served at Middle Eastern eateries. The kebabs in the buffet are usually chicken, but you can order beef, lamb, and kofta kebabs from the menu. He will proudly tell you that he shops at farmers markets for much of the produce that goes into the nearly 30 vegetarian dishes that he offers on a rotating basis. Indian spiced mixed seasonal vegetables are deservedly popular, as are saag, variations on the dal theme, and minty house-made stuffed grape leaves. In the case he isn't behind the counter to urge you, I'll do it for him. If the soup is Moroccan lentil, get it. And we have run out of time for today's episode of Restaurant Reviews. I hope you listen again, and I hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Missy Hollander, reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for a print and visually impaired audience. This program is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast. So long until next time.